Genesis 42, this chapter is all about Joseph and his brothers. And this is some of the most exciting reading in all of the Bible, the story of Joseph. It is just really exciting. But as we start here tonight, I want to just take us to another direction for just a few moments and remind us of, remember the story of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan, the good friend of David. And when King Saul was killed in battle, the maid that was taking care of Mephibosheth feared for their lives, because when the king gets killed, then somebody else is going to take over, and then they usually wipe out the whole king's family. And so they ran for their lives, and she grabbed up Mephibosheth, who was about 5 years old, and took off running with him, and she stumbled and fell, and when she came down, both of his legs were broken. And because they were fugitives, they were hiding, there was evidently no doctor, no way of straightening those legs and putting them back in good repair again, and he was a cripple for the rest of his life. And I use that illustration to remind us that, you know, when someone breaks their leg, and I've never broken a bone, so I haven't experienced it personally, but I've seen it happen, but when someone breaks a leg or breaks an arm or breaks something else, the doctor typically takes it and straightens it out, and it's very painful to put the bone back in its place, push it where it belongs, and then put the cast on it to hold it all in place, all the plaster around it to keep it in place. And that procedure, even though it is painful, we do it because it is for our good. It's for our good. And there's a lot of times troubles come that are for our good. And we see that here in this chapter, that God was allowing troubles, tests, and turmoils in the lives of Joseph's brothers for their good. And I want us to see these things and make application to see how that these same kind of things, the troubles, testings, and turmoils come to us, but they're for our good. And many times it's not easy to see that when we're in the midst of it. But here we see in verse number 1 of chapter 42, it says, "Now when Jacob saw that there was corn or grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, why do ye look one upon another?" Now that is a very important statement. What were they doing? The boys were saying, "I hear there's grain down in Egypt. What are we going to do? I'm not going to Egypt. You, what do you think? Should we go down to Egypt? I'm not going to Egypt." They didn't want to go to Egypt. Why? My guess is that was the last place they wanted to go, because they had sent their brother down to Egypt 20 years earlier, and they didn't want anything to do with Egypt. And they were looking one upon another, and their dad says, "Come on, boys, quit looking at each other. Get going down to Egypt. Get us some grain." And so the troubles started in their lives. And the trouble, well, here we see right off, is that they had a famine. And, you know, famine was serious. They couldn't just go to some store and get their food. They had their food in out of their fields. And if their garden all dried up, you know, if they had a bunch of days like we had last week, you know, where it was scorching hot and everything dried up dry and there was nothing left in the garden, and what are we going to eat? You know, the garden's all dead. And then the paddock is all turning brown and the sheep are starting to cry, and some of them are dying, and they come in and say, "Hey, Dad, you know, there's 3 dead sheep out there because they don't have anything to eat. And what are we going to do? And there's hardly any water. And, well, just go carry it from the place further away." And it was a lot of stress, a lot of stress. This was a huge time of trouble to have a famine. And Jacob, they hear word that there's grain down in Egypt. And he says, "Boys, quit looking at each other. Get down there to Egypt and get us some grain." And so this is a great stress for them. And, you know, as we think about this, God knew all about that. God knew about the famine that was coming before Joseph went to Egypt 21 years earlier. God knew all about that. God knew all about it long before that. And they're here in Hebron. Joseph's down in Egypt, and the famine is covering the land. Their things are drying up, and they're getting hungry. And as we think about the fact that God knows all those things, just like this whole pandemic that we're in right now, God knew all about that long time ago. And God knows exactly what's going to come of it. He knows what's all going to happen in this next year to come. You know, Jacob and his family were feeling the burden of this famine, and it was a terrible, terrible time for them. It was a major trouble for them. And they've heard there's grain down there, and they look at each other. They don't want to go, and they said, we're going to have to do something. So finally, the boys decide, all right, we better head down to Egypt. And so they gather their things together, and they head down toward Egypt. And, you know, we must learn to trust the Lord fully. And that's exactly what they needed. They needed to learn to trust the Lord. And they were not walking with the Lord. They were not right with the Lord. They had sold their brother. They thought their brother was probably dead by now. And it was haunting them. It was troubling them. They still couldn't get over those thoughts. They kept going through their minds. And yet they needed to learn to trust God. And, you know, as we looked at the days ahead, you know, the trouble with COVID and the trouble with loss of jobs and sickness and shortages all the heartaches and troubles that are in our world today. You know, this is everywhere around us, and we need to believe that God has adequate provision for us. God had all this planned. He knew there was a famine coming. He had arranged for Joseph to be down there. He arranged for Joseph to be taken out of prison, put into a position of leadership. He has stored up all this grain. God did all that because God knew that this was all coming. And God knows exactly what our needs are. He knows exactly how to meet those needs, and God's going to take care of us. But we've got to trust Him. Now, the boys are headed down to Egypt. They take this trip down to Egypt, and their troubles are only beginning. They had the great troubles back home with a famine, but now they get down to Egypt, and their troubles increase. We see in verse number 3, and Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn or grain in Egypt, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob, sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. Now, let's just stop for a moment and think about Benjamin. All right? Benjamin and Joseph were full-blood brothers. Those are the only two boys that were the full-blood brothers. They were the sons of Rachel. All right? And Rachel was Jacob's favorite wife. And Joseph and Benjamin were quite a few years apart in age, probably about 15 years apart in age. All right? And Joseph, when by the time he was sold into slavery, Benjamin was probably only 2 years old, somewhere around that. So he was just a little boy. But now, 21 years have passed. Benjamin is no longer a little boy. In fact, when you read later on, when we read about them moving down to Egypt, Benjamin has more kids than any of his brothers. He's got 10 kids. Now, maybe his wife had triplets each time. I don't know. But he had a pile of kids. Right? And so he's just a young man, but he's not a little boy anymore. But Dad says, you're not going down with them. You're the only thing I have left. And he still was playing favorites. Now, Jacob didn't learn his lesson. He played favorites with Joseph, and now Joseph's gone, so Benjamin's the next best thing. So Benjamin now is his pet, his favorite. And so he's spoiling Benjamin. He says, Benjamin's not going down. The rest of you guys get down there and get some grain for us, but Benjamin's staying here with me. I'm not going to let him go. All right? So we see the problem is still there in Jacob's heart and his life and all these problems that he's caused by his favoritism. Now, Joseph's brothers arrive in Egypt, verse number 5. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn or grain. Among those that came for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was the governor over the land. And he it was that sold all to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them. But he made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and said unto them, ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land are ye come. And they said, nay, my lord, to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies. And he said unto them, nay, but to see the nakedness of the land are ye come. And they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest of is this day with our father, and one is not. And Joseph said unto them, that is that is it that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. And he put them all in ward 3 days. Now, think about the troubles. They had troubles back in Canaan. Now they got big troubles. They get down into Egypt, and Joseph sees them, and he's treating them roughly. And, you know, we ask ourselves, well, why didn't they recognize Joseph? Well, first of all, it had been 21 years, and things changed. But now Joseph is dressed like an Egyptian. He's got the Egyptian clothing on. He's got the Egyptian hairstyle on. And he's speaking in Egyptian. He purposely, when he saw them, he called his interpreter and said, all right, I'm not going to talk to these guys in Hebrew. I'm going to talk to them in Egyptian. You interpret for me. I want you to interpret. So he's interpreting everything they're saying. So all that Joseph says to them, he's interpreting for them. And so this guy is interpreting, and Joseph's hiding his identity so that they don't know who he is. And the brothers, they're scared out of their wits now. They're being accused of spies. To be accused of spy could have been their life. Joseph had the power to take off their heads. And they knew that. And they're scared out of their wits now. And so their troubles have increased. And they've got a lot of troubles now. And so Joseph locks them up in prison. And he treats them very roughly. And gives them all this grief to add to them. Now, why is Joseph doing all this? Joseph wants to see if there's been any change in their lives since the 21 years ago that he last saw them. He wants to see whether there's any tenderness or any repentance in their lives. And so he's given them these burdens, these troubles. And all these troubles were there for one reason. It was for their good. It was for their good, because things were going to change as they faced those troubles, and as they were forced to face their guilt and forced to face the things that they had done wrong to Joseph, then and only then could they get right with God and get right with Joseph. And so God was using these things to help them, to benefit them, and it was for their good. And their troubles forced them to face these things face on. And God uses those same kind of things in our lives. You know, those troubles that come our way, we don't like them. They're no fun. They're hard. Sometimes they're painful. But God has a plan, and they're for our good. And we need to remember that. But then we see not only did they have troubles, but then God uses tests in our lives to strengthen us and help us and to bring us to the place for our good. Joseph here begins to question his brothers. Verses 9 to 16, we saw there how he's asking them questions. And who are you? And where'd you come from? And, you know, why are you here? And all of these typical questions. But he's really kind of probing them to see how things are going back home. And he hears about his brother. And remember, Joseph, he hadn't seen Benjamin for 21 years. Last time he saw him, he was just a little guy hardly toddling around. And 21 years had passed. And now Joseph hears about his brother, and he says, you're going to bring your brother down here, or you're not going to see him in face again. And so Joseph is very rough on them. He calls them spies, and he puts them in prison and leaves them there for 3 days. And, you know, this he was testing their attitude and their humility. And they bowed themselves before him, just like God said they would. And they didn't want to believe that. And they had no idea that's what they were doing at that time. They called themselves his servants. They were humble before him. So Joseph is seeing that they have a decent attitude. And he's testing their honesty and their faithfulness by requiring their brother to come. He's saying, are you guys really telling me the truth? Are you a changed person? Are you going to lie to me like you lied to Dad all these years? And so he's checking them out to see what kind of an attitude they have. Now, Joseph tested his brothers not only with questions, but he also tested them with prison. He stuck them all of them in prison in verse 17. He put them all in ward for 3 days. Now, they had no idea how long they were going to be in prison. He didn't tell them, I'm going to stick you in here for 3 days. And you know, I can't help but wonder, the Bible doesn't tell us, but I have this idea that during those 3 days, Joseph is thinking, all right, God, what am I supposed to do with these guys now? I got them in prison. what do you want me to do to them? What is your plan? And Joseph, I believe, probably spent some good time praying and speaking God's face and saying, Lord, show me what to do with their, with these guys now. And then we see in verse number 18, and Joseph said unto them, Joseph said unto them the third day, this do and live, for I fear God. Now that is unique. He told them that he feared God. And remember, he's still talking through an interpreter. He's not talking to them directly. They have no idea that he understands a word of Hebrew. And so they're talking through an interpreter. Joseph's constantly going back. If any of you ever talked through an interpreter, drives you crazy. Drives you crazy. I've done it. And there was one time when I was in Papua New Guinea that I was preaching in a village. And I spoke, and that was when I first got there. I didn't know pidgin yet. So I spoke in English. Missionary translated it into pidgin. And then one of the tribal guys translated in the pidgin into their tribal language. By the time it got back to me, I couldn't remember what I said. And so, I mean, I'd say one little line and they'd go on and on and on. I'd think, well, what's the end of that? But it's a different kind of a thing to use a translator like that. But Joseph is doing this on purpose to keep himself hidden from his brothers. But he tells them that he fears God, and he says, this is what I'm going to do. He said, if ye be true men, verse 19, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison, and go ye, carry corn for your family, and for the famine of your houses. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. All right, now, he's given them his orders. You're going to have to go back home and bring your brother back to me. And the next two verses are key to this whole chapter. Look at verse 21. And they, his brothers, said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben said unto them, answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, this also, his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, and for he spake unto them by an interpreter. And he turned himself about from them, and he wept. And he returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes. Now, there's some very important things in here. Number one, Joseph sees what he's looking for. He was looking to see whether they were genuinely broken and sorry. And they've admitted to each other, you know, that we were wrong. We should not have sold our brother. We should have listened to his anguish. We should have heard him. We should not have sold him as a slave. We were wrong. So here's their apology right there, even though they don't know that he hears it. He hears that. But then also, verse number 22, Reuben speaks up. Now, who was Reuben? He was the big brother. He was the oldest one of the family. Now, remember, they had very strong family ties. The oldest ones in the family were the leaders. All right? Reuben was the leader of the family. Reuben has told his brothers, don't do this. We shouldn't have sold him. And you didn't listen to me. And then Reuben got sidetracked to doing something else, and they sold off from underneath him. Now, who was second in line after Reuben? Simeon. Simeon was second in line. Remember Simeon, he had some bad reputations. Remember, Simeon was one of the ones that led the fight against all the people in Samaria there, where they went and they killed off all the families. Remember, they told them they had to get circumcised, and while they were still sorry, they went in there and killed them all off. Simeon was the leader of that. He was a cruel, harsh, mean fella. And he's the second in charge. So once Joseph heard that big brother Reuben was trying to help him, then he said, all right, I know what I'm going to do. Simeon's going to be the one that stays in prison. So he took Simeon and bound him in front of them. And so he binds Simeon, puts him in prison before their eyes, verse number 24. So Simeon now who was probably the ringleader, probably the one who caused Joseph really to be sent off and all these bad things happen. Now, the other guys put their thoughts into it as well, and they were all in on it. But Simeon was probably leading it since Reuben was not there at the moment, so he's second in charge. And so all of these things are taking place. Now, Joseph is testing them and putting him through all these things. Now, Joseph could have, you know, there would have been a temptation in Joseph's heart as soon as he saw his brothers come. And they all come lining up, they're lining, you can just picture in your mind, I don't know how it all would have worked, but Joseph's there probably sitting up on his big, you know, chair in the room there with all the grain around and somebody taking records of people that needed to hear, and so the treasurer's over here taking their money, and so they walk up and the next guy, who's next? Okay, yeah, come up here. I need 10 bags of grain because I live up here. All right, it's going to be, you know, $500, and you know, you, all right, pay the treasurer here and you go get his 10 bags of grain. Yeah, however they handled that. And then he sees in line 10 guys. And he's thinking, I know those guys. Those are my brothers. Those are my brothers. So before they get up to him, they're still in line. Before they get up to him, he calls to his interpreter. He says, bring me an interpreter. All right. I want you to talk to these Hebrews. I'm not going to let them know that I'm Hebrew. All right. And so, and he talks to his brothers, gives them all this rough treatment, and this is how it all comes together. And all of these things, Joseph is doing these things to help them to see where they were wrong, so that he could see what was taking place in their lives. He was testing them. He was putting them through all these tests to draw the truth out of them. He wanted to know what was taking place there. And he was checking to see whether they were still hateful and cruel, and whether they were true and honest, or whether they were trustworthy, and whether he could depend upon them, whether their hearts had changed, whether they were humble. You know, he wanted to know all these things. You know, sometimes God tests our lives to see where we're at. You know, to help us to become humble and repentant. God may test us, run us through some testing to try to get us to soften or to break or to bend. But it's always for our good. We need to remember that. Psalm 86:5, for thou, Lord, art good and ready to forgive and plenteous in mercy unto all them that come upon thee. Proverbs 28:13, he that covereth his sin shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy. And so God was showing mercy to these men by giving them an opportunity to confess their evils and to get right and to turn their attitudes right. And Joseph was working with God on these things. Now, you know, there's times that God tests us to just reveal our hearts. What is our heart like? Like when God tested Abraham and told him to sacrifice his son. Abraham hadn't done anything wrong. But God wanted to know, where is his heart? Does he have a heart for me? Is he willing to give in, give me everything? And so sometimes God does that. It doesn't. Every time we go through a hardship or trouble, it doesn't necessarily mean we've done something wrong and we've got to get right. But sometimes God does use those kind of things in those ways. So that brings us to the third thought that I want us to look at here tonight. Not only did they have troubles, they had tests, but now they have turmoils. It's just getting worse. And now their conscience is tearing them up inside, and they're feeling guilty. They know that what they did was wrong to their brother some 21 years ago. You know, see, all these things are just as vivid in their minds as they could be, because they're in Egypt now. They don't want to be in Egypt because this place gives them the creeps because Joseph was here. And they know deep down inside that what they had done, did to Joseph was wrong, but they have no clue. No clue at all that Joseph is the prime minister and that they're standing before him. And so their guilt is piling up. And perhaps during these 3 days, you know, while they're bound there in prison, Joseph's seeking God's mind, and their guilt is intensifying and it's getting worse and worse. And they're thinking, oh boy, look at all the problems. You can imagine those 10 boys there in prison, and they had 3 days to think about what is happening. You know, we didn't want to come down here. Dad told us we had to come down here. We came down here. Now this guy's treating us roughly. He's calling us spies. We may lose our lives. And it's like God's got a curse on us because of what we did. We're in big trouble. And they had so much boiling inside of them that were just eating them to pieces with their guilt. We know that unconfessed guilt is tormenting. We've all been there. You know, maybe not to this extent, maybe not holding it back for 21 years, but we all know what that's like. You know, we've done something wrong and we don't want to admit it, and it eats at us inside. And that's exactly what was taking place here in these guys' lives, even though it had been many years that it had taken place in. And the guilt was causing great turmoil in their lives. But then not only that, they finally get released and they head back home in verse number 25. And Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with grain and to restore every man's money to his sack and to give them provisions for the way. Now that's an important statement, you know. He also gave them provisions for the way. I looked up the word provision. It means just food to eat along the path, on the journey. So Joseph provided for them. He had no obligation to do that. He's still treating them nicely and kindly, even though, because they're his brothers. But he had no, I mean, I'm sure that he didn't give provision for anybody else on the way home. So he treated them with specialty, and yet at the same time he was treating them harshly. And so all this was kind of confusing in their minds. And thus he did unto them. Verse 26, and they laded their asses with the corn and departed thence. And then as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender at the inn, he spied his money, and behold, it was in the sack's mouth. And he said to his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. And their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God hath done unto us? They said, God's cursed us. We're in trouble. We are in trouble. And verse 29, and they came to Jacob their father unto the land of Canaan and told him all that befell them unto them, saying, the man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us, and he took us for spies of the country. And he said, we said unto him, we are true men. We are no spies. We are 12 brethren, the sons of our father, one is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. The men of Lord of the country said unto us, hereby shall ye know that I shall know that ye are true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for your for the famine of your family, of your household. Sorry, and be gone, and bring your youngest brother unto me. Then shall I know that ye are no spies, but that ye are true men. So will I deliver you, your brother, and ye shall traffic in the land. And it came to pass, as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. You can imagine what is happening. Everything's going wrong. The turmoil is piling on. Their grief is getting worse. And things are getting worse all the time. Not only did this guy treat us roughly, he's got Simeon in prison. And we're not going to get him back unless we take Benjamin with us. And Dad doesn't want Benjamin to go down there. And now they put all, we've got, somehow this money got back in our sacks. We are thieves. And they're going to accuse us. And they're going to stick us in prison forever. And we're never going to get out. If we go back there, they'll certainly grab us. And we'll never get free. We're doomed. All these things are going through their minds. They're scared out of their wits. And even Dad's scared for them now. It came to pass, verse 36, and Jacob their father said unto them, me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me. And Reuben spake unto him. Now notice Reuben, head of the family, he speaks up. And he says, Father, slay my two sons if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in which ye go, then shall ye bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Jacob says, no, you're not going to take him down there. And we'll see next week what happens. But this is a great time of turmoil in their lives. Turmoil has increased, and it is causing them great grief. and Jacob is grieved, and the boys are grieved, and they're worried that if they go down there, they're all going to end up being prisoners or slaves or killed for what they've done. They'll be accused of robbery, and everything's going against them. And Joseph has done all this stuff, and God has used that through Joseph to get them to the breaking point where they're going to say, "We were wrong," so that they will admit their guilt before God and before Joseph. You know, just this week I was reading in the book of Job, in chapter 1, verse number 12, and it says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath," speaking of Job, "all that Job hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord." You know, that reminded me that no trouble, no test, no turmoil will ever come into my path or yours without God's permission. You know, that is such an encouragement if we'll stop and think about that. No trouble, no hardship, no difficulty, no heartache will ever come into our paths without God saying, "It's okay. You can do that." If Satan brings those troubles to us, God has given us permission. So that means that every time God allows that, God knows all about it, and God has allowed it for our good. He's allowed it for our good. Now, Job, God allowed that in Job's life for his good. And at the end of the whole story, you read, and Job has learned something. He's drawn closer to God, and it's been for his good. And every time God puts a person through difficulties, it is for his good. And even when it's chastening, you know, like I said, not all the troubles are because we've done wrong. But even when it is, God does it for our good. We read in Hebrews 12:11, "Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby." God said it'll be good for them, even though they don't like it. It's not going to be pleasant, but it's good for them. And that God wants us to trust Him fully and humbly submit during those difficult times. And you know, every one of us are going to face difficult times. We've already faced many. This year may be full of more. We don't know what this year brings. But as the troubles come into our lives, we need to remember that God has allowed them for our good. And we need to learn from them. We need to trust God and depend upon Him. And Joseph is working with his brothers not to try to be cruel. Joseph is not punishing them. He's testing them. And we're going to see in the weeks to come, as Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, the excitement and the thrill and the joy that he has with them. He's not their enemy. He's their friend. But he's putting them through this for their good. And so, as we think on these things, it's good for us to remember how to respond when troubles come our way. And just in closing, how did Job respond? Well, Job, remember, he responded, he says, "Though he slay me, yet I will trust in him." How did Paul respond when God said, "No, you can't, I won't take away your thorn in the flesh"? He said, "Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." How did James say that we are to respond? He says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations." It's not easy, but that's what God wants. He wants us to be thankful. And it's not easy. It's not easy to be joyful and thankful for problems and troubles and turmoils and testings. But if we can keep our eye on the fact that God doesn't make any mistakes, God's in control, and it's for our good, God can get the glory and we'll be strengthened through it. So with God's help, we need to do the same as it took place with these men here, Job and Paul and James, and we need to just ask God to help us to endure the troubles that come our way for His glory.